Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Fortcast, the official podcast of Fort Healthcare. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Anderson, ear, nose, and throat doc, and president and CEO of Fort Healthcare. I'm very excited for my guest today. He has been on other episodes of the Fortcast. We welcome back Dr. Riad Moussatif, our cardiologist here at Fort Healthcare. And we are going to be talking today about myocardial infarction, otherwise known as the heart attack. So Dr. Moussatif, welcome back to the Fortcast.
Hi, Dr. Anderson. I appreciate you having me back on. Just to let everybody know, my name is, again, Riad Moussatif. I'm an interventional cardiologist. I'm from Kenosha, Wisconsin. I'm a double badger. I went to Madison for both undergrad and medical school, and I'm happy to be part of Fort Healthcare.
Well, Dr. Moussatif, we're very, very happy to have you. Before we get into the topic of myocardial infarction, just real quick, I know you're an interventional cardiologist, but for our listeners, can you kind of educate us on the different types of cardiologists there are?
Yep. So cardiology is a specialty of your heart, but it expands that. And so from cardiology, there's multiple subspecialties. The heart is very complex. And so there is an electrical part of the heart for people who have arrhythmias. And the, so you can imagine, you can just hold your hand up and your palm is cardiology and all your fingers are the other subspecialties off of cardiology. And so if you are involved in the electrical part of the heart, that's an additional training. And we call those doctors electrophysiologists. So they're cardiologists who did extra training for the electrical part of the heart. And then we have physicians who specialize in transplant. So all of our patients who have heart transplants and heart failure, that's another subspecialty where they train additionally to take care of those patients. So those are called heart failure cardiologists. There's also patients who are born with congenital problems, like big hearts or little babies who need heart surgery. So we also have cardiologists who specialize in congenital cardiology. And then what I am is an interventional cardiologist. We're the heart doctors who do procedures on your heart. So if you have a blockage in your heart that causes a heart attack, we can actually go in there and open it up with a stent. Or if you have a hole in your heart, I can close that hole through your wrist or through your leg without having you have open heart surgery. We can put pacemakers in you. We can also repair your blood vessels. So people have aneurysms where their arteries are really enlarged and they could rupture, and we repair those by making small incisions in your legs. So interventional cardiologists are cardiologists who also do procedures, invasive cardiac procedures.
All right. Well, you know what? That is a perfect lead-in to our topic today. So Dr. Moussatif, we hear the term heart attack all the time. And could you give us an explanation or some background on what exactly happens to a heart when there is a heart attack? What is going on a physiologic level to the heart at that time?
So your heart is a pump. I know in other programs we had discussed the example of a sub pump in your basement, a mechanical pump. And the heart is just like the sub pump in your basement. It's a mechanical device that pumps and circulates your blood throughout your whole body. All of our body is made up of small cells, these little kind of balls and circles, organisms that tie into each other and they perform functions. But in order for them to live, they need food and they need oxygen. And so even though your heart is pumping all the blood that's full of food, we call it ATP, or it's just a fancy word for basically energy and oxygen, it also needs the same thing. And so your heart pumps the blood outside a big pipe, and we call that pipe an aorta. Everybody's heard of an aorta, but that's the big pipe that comes out of the heart. And it's just like the water main that comes from the city to your house, that big pipe. Your heart pumps the blood full of oxygen and full of energy to deliver to your whole body through that pipe. But because your heart is also a living organism, it needs its own supply of that gold. We call it liquid gold. And so your heart has little pipes that come off there. And you can imagine it just like your house. When the city line comes and brings water, clean water to your house, your sink in your kitchen, takes a line off that. Your toilets take a line off that. Your showers take a line off that. Your washer machine takes a line off that. And your body's the same way. The aorta is a big pipe, but your heart takes three big pipes off that to feed itself. And then your arms take big pipes off it. Your brain takes big pipes off it. And every organ in your body runs a pipe off that aorta all the way down to your toes. So those arteries that feed your heart are called coronary arteries. And as long as they're wide open, then no matter how fast your heart pumps, if you're running up a hill or if you're just sitting calmly doing yoga or meditating, your body will open and expand those pipes in order to get the blood flow to what your heart needs. Your body is very efficient. So if you're sitting there calmly, your heart's pumping very slowly, you don't need that much blood. And the coronary arteries, the arteries that feed your, supply your heart with blood and oxygen and energy, are very small. But if you start to move, and let's say you run up a hill or go upstairs, your heart will start to pump faster and harder. It will need more blood to supply more oxygen and more energy. Those coronary arteries will dilate open. Now, unfortunately, just like the pipes in an old home, they can become rusty, and that rust can cause the drain to clog. And if one of those arteries clog, then whatever area of the heart that one of those three blood vessels was supplying, that area of that muscle of the heart will no longer get oxygen or energy. And just like all of us, if we don't get oxygen or food, energy will die. The area of the heart, that muscle that's supplied by that artery, is cut off of oxygen and energy, and it dies. And that's the term myocardial infarction or heart attack.
Gotcha. So the coronary arteries, the three major coronary arteries that we humans have, what are some of the most common reasons why those arteries wouldn't be able to supply the blood and oxygen to the heart muscle as it pumps?
So we'll talk about the typical main one. Sometimes you can get, so these arteries, let me just step back. So the arteries themselves, even though we're all visualizing them as little tubes, they're actually dynamic structures. They have an inner layer. Then behind that, they have like a connective tissue and a muscle layer. And then they have like an external layer as well. There's multiple layers inside those arteries, and that allows it to expand and contract. Unfortunately, as we age, multiple things can damage those arteries. So if you're a young 20-year-old healthy person and we were to dissect your arteries, the inner layer would be very smooth. You wouldn't even be able to see the cells that are connected to each other. It would look like a smooth piece of plastic. But as we get older, multiple things can damage those arteries. Smoking can damage the inside layer. Not exercising can damage the inside layer. Being obese can damage the inside layer. Inactivity, not exercising, can cause inflammation and damage the inside layer. Diabetes can damage the inside layer. And so what happens is your body produces cholesterol, and that's why most people who are listening have had their cholesterol checked and maybe on some medications for cholesterol. But that cholesterol actually can sneak inside those arteries and go behind the inner wall and slowly start to build up plaque. And then as it forms plaque, it starts to narrow your vessel. And eventually it narrows it so severe that your heart cannot get oxygen anymore. That will cause chest pain. That will cause shortness of breath when you walk. But occasionally what will happen, and it's an unfortunate thing that can happen, is that plaque buildup can pop, almost like a pimple can pop on somebody's face. And when it pops, all those contents go inside your artery. Now, what happens is your immune system can detect when things are in the wrong area. So they would see that all this fat, plaque, and calcium are inside your artery, and it will think it's a bad organism, like a bug, and it'll try to kill that organism. And your body overreacts. And one of the ways that it kills organisms is it forms blood clots around them to cut off the oxygen and kill them. But when you form a blood clot inside an artery, you just clog the pipe. And when you clog the pipe, then no more blood flow goes past that clog. And that cuts off the blood flow to that area of the muscle, and you get a heart attack.
Well, I mean, clearly this is a very serious issue and a serious medical condition. So Dr. Moussatif, are there some warning signs that patients can have prior to having a full out myocardial infarction or heart attack as their vessels may be narrowing or as plaque is building up? Are there some telltale symptoms that they may be experiencing prior to having a heart attack?
Yeah, absolutely. But sometimes there's not warning signs. And that's why I urge everybody, they should be evaluated, their wellness checks with their primary providers, because there are some screening things that your providers can do, because sometimes you won't feel it. But the classic symptoms are chest tightness. And usually the classic symptoms are when you walk or you're shoveling the snow or you're going upstairs, you become more short of breath than you used to. The other thing that can happen is you can become lightheaded or dizzy or even pass out. And then the classic thing is that you start to feel some chest tightness. And that chest tightness can be very different. It can feel like a heaviness. It can feel like a squeezing pain. It can feel specifically like pain or somebody grabbing you and squeezing your chest. But it can also be as subtle as a toothache. It can be as subtle as your left arm having numbness or tingling or pain. Those are very subtle things. Unfortunately, not everybody thinks about that they're having a heart attack. And so a lot of these things happen very slowly. People naturally start to slow down when they walk, adjusting it without realizing what they're doing. They don't push themselves. They kind of dismiss it as I'm getting older or I've gained weight. And so a lot of these symptoms end up getting ignored. And then unfortunately, sometimes it's too late. But another poor, or I think a terrible thing for us humans, is that you don't feel those symptoms until your arteries are blocked at least 70%. And that has to do with a hemodynamic principle that you can, it's like sticking your hand over a hose. So when you put your thumb over the tip of a hose, what happens with the water? It comes out faster. And one of the hemodynamic rules is that you can actually put your thumb over 70% of that hole and the water can just come out faster. So if you're pushing out, let's say, a liter a minute out of your hose, you could put your thumb over 70% of that hole and it would just come out faster and still deliver a liter of water a minute. But once you go past 70%, then the fluid cannot speed up fast enough and you'll get something less than a liter of fluid. And that's when you start to feel symptoms. But the majority of heart attacks happen with vessel blockages of actually less than 35%. So you would have no warning. And that has to do with what we call the cap. So the cap is the covering on the blockage. Blockages don't, usually when they get to 70% or more, the cap on them is very calcified and thick. And that's why some people may have heard of doing screening tests with something called a CT calcium score, where they take a picture of your heart and they look for calcium. Calcium is a marker of plaque buildup. But if your blood vessel gets to 70% blocked, that's actually a good thing for you, because that usually means that the cap covering the blockage is very calcified and it doesn't usually rupture. If you think the unfortunate example of like a pimple, that would be one of those really deep pimples that you're unable to pop. But if you had what we call like a whitehead pimple, if you just brush it too hard, it could pop. And those are the blockages that are less than 35% that you would have no warning symptoms or signs. But because the cap is so thin, it could rupture. And when it ruptures, that contact goes inside your blood vessels and then your immune system overreacts and causes a blockage. And those are the emergency heart attacks that people end up in the hospital and do end up having a procedure emergently. That's why I go back to my initial statement. It's important for all of us to be screened for some of the risk factors we mentioned and to see your primary provider for your wellness visit and discuss whether there's some screening tests that they can do to try to determine whether you have blockages before you feel them.
So Dr. Moussatif, before we talk a little bit about screening and treatments for coronary artery blockage, which can lead to a heart attack, if somebody does experience a heart attack, what is the mortality rate of that event?
So we've gotten a lot better heart disease, still the number one killer of adults in America. We've gotten a lot better at treating them. We have really strong medications, almost like liquid Drano, that we can give in emergency rooms. And so if anybody's having chest pain or shortness of breath, you should not drive yourself to the ER. You're a lot better off calling 911 and having an ambulance come to your house, because EMS are trained to do some screening tests. They can actually do something we call an EKG, whereas they hook up little stickers to you and we can see the electrical circuitry of your heart, and we can actually see a heart attack based on that. And they could call that ahead to the emergency room. And so your care plan starts to get initiated before you even get to the hospital. If you drive yourself to the hospital, you delay care, and that could affect people. And so you should call 911. But we have medications that can help treat it immediately. And then we have cardiac catheterization labs, where you get taken into an operating room type area where we can stick a small tube in your arm, in your wrist, and we go into those blood vessels of your heart. And under X-ray, we can look for blockages. And if we find a blockage, we can put a little tiny balloon in there and open up the blockage and restore flow. Very similar to a Roto-Rooter. You know, when you stick a Roto-Rooter down a drain to open up a blockage, we do the same thing for humans.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. How big are those balloons that you're using in the coronary arteries to try to help open them up? Those have got to be tiny.
Yeah, they can range from 1 millimeter in diameter all the way up to 5 millimeters in diameter. So a half a centimeter, which is, you know, not very big. It's weird. We learn centimeters in medicine and then all of America is on inches. So I don't even know what 5 millimeters is in inches, but it's very small. You're correct.
It's very small. That's all I know.
Very small.
Yeah. And, you know, it's pretty remarkable that medicine has progressed to be able to do that. So if you think of the mortality rates in terms of decades, if you start with like the 1960s and move on forward, we've definitely made significant strides in mortality rates for myocardial infarctions. Is that the case, Dr. Moustif?
Yeah, absolutely. If someone has onset of symptoms and they're able to call 911, their survival rate is very good. We can get in there and open it up. Medicine has evolved a lot. We still have a lot of ways to go. But just to give you an example, you know, more than 50 years ago, if you had a heart attack, the only thing they would do is just have you lay in a bed for 30 days and people would develop blood clots and die. There was at Harvard, some one physician started to get people up out of their bed at 2 weeks, and people were screaming at that person that he was committing malpractice by moving someone. So we've developed a long way. We use aspirin. We have a bunch of other medications that help decrease mortality, or that we call that mortality for death rate. And we're able to reestablish flow in those arteries. We've developed bypass surgery where we can fix those arteries. We can do endarterectomies, which is a fancy word for going in there and kind of cleaning out the plaque. We've developed these stents and balloons. And recently, we actually have balloons that have special drug coating on them that prevent your body from rebuilding plaque. We have kind of drills, we call them Roto-Rooters, that we can go in there and clean out the arteries. And in the future, maybe not for you and I, Mike, but for the younger people, they're developing special organisms, kind of like the game that we played, Pac-Man, that will be programmed. We can just give it to people and it'll go in there and start eating all the plaque and cleaning out our arteries. So my job will be replaced too with these special organisms that can go in there and eat it all out. So that's in the future. That's not here yet.
That's pretty remarkable. So Dr. Moustif, once that cardiac tissue has been deprived of oxygen and maybe, for lack of a better term, dies a little bit, once you reestablish the vascularity to that area, does the muscle recover?
Yeah, it's a great question. So our body is so remarkable. I think I mentioned that on some of our other podcasts. Our body is amazing. And just a little, even though we think we know a lot in 2025, we're just scratching the surface of understanding how our body works. But one of the unique things about our heart muscle is before it dies, it actually can go into hibernation. So it becomes like bears. You know how bears go in a cave and they hibernate and they don't eat for a long time, but they're still able to survive. And so before your heart muscle dies, it can stop moving. It just freezes. It ignores all the signals to contract. It ignores everything and it shuts down. So a lot of the times, if you look at the heart, it looks like it's dead tissue. But when you reestablish blood flow, that heart muscle then comes back and starts functioning normally. If a heart muscle does die, then it can't come back. And unfortunately, your body can regenerate a lot of different organisms in your body and a lot of different muscles. You know, if you cut yourself, your body's able to regenerate the skin. But we don't regenerate our heart muscle yet. There has been multiple studies using stem cells. And a stem cell is a special cell in your body that can become something else. It still hasn't what we call differentiated yet. Let me just step back and explain that. So in your body, every cell in a human's body, and there's billions of cells, all of them contain the DNA, and that's the instructions to recreate you. But what happens is as those cells differentiate, which means kind of grow up, they become nails on your finger, they can become bone, they can become a kidney, they can become a heart. They differentiate. They lock up all their DNA, and they only leave the DNA, the instructions for whatever they've become. And all the other stuff's locked up. But stem cells, what we call totipotent stem cells, they have not locked up all their DNA and they can become anything. And there's a lot of research now on how to use those stem cells to regenerate the heart. We can't do it now, but that is the future. And just for our listeners to be proud of Wisconsin, the UW-Madison has one of the largest banks of stem cells in the world. So we grow those stem lines for all the research labs throughout the whole world. So that's a pretty amazing thing for us Wisconsin Badgers.
Well, I tell you, that's pretty remarkable to think what the future has in hold. And 100 years from now, they'll look back at 2025 and they'll kind of scratch their head and say, I can't believe that they were doing that back then. Just like we look at 1925 or 1825, it's truly remarkable what is possible in the future. Dr. Moussatif, I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us today on the Fortcast and talking about myocardial infarction and all that's involved in it. Thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate you for having me. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. You too. And I want to say thank you to our listeners. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Fortcast. If so, please share it on your social channels. And also, please check out our library for our full complete set of Fortcast episodes. Once again, this is Dr. Michael Anderson signing off. Thank you for listening and have a great day. So long.